Funding for Think comes from SMU's Master of Liberal Studies.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. How much stuff does one person need to own? Chastened by the economic meltdown of 2008, a growing number of people who used to be traditional consumers are seeking to access things rather than acquire them. So rather than buying a new power tool or car or DVD, they are renting it or making something they're not using at the moment available for somebody else to borrow. Technological and communications advances are making it easier than ever for people to trade, barter, and share with peers all over the world, saving manufacturing materials and money, and often creating new relationships along the way. Rachel Botsman is a brand and innovation strategy consultant. She and co-author Rue Rogers write about this trend in their new book, What's Mine is Yours, The Rise of Collaborative Consumption. They've also got a website at collaborativeconsumption.com. Rachel, welcome to Think.
Thank you.
What falls under the rubric of collaborative consumption?
It's actually a wide spectrum of old market behaviors. So some of them you mentioned. So everything from swapping, trading, renting, bartering, sharing, and borrowing. But it's how they're being reinvented through modern day technologies.
Yeah, it's interesting because we've been doing this almost as long as there's been a marketplace. But before, you had to really know somebody in order to make all this work.
I mean, that's exactly right. What we're basically doing is when we used to live in villages or local communities, these types of trades were done over a handshake. But now with the web, we live in a global village, so we can mimic those exchanges and share things in a way that have never been possible before.
There are so many things that we all own that we rarely use, and when we need them, we need them. But how did we get out of the habit of sharing or renting or borrowing in the first place and decide we needed to own everything outright?
Because advertisers told us that we needed to do so. I mean, it's funny, but we don't often think about it, but consumerism is a very modern construct that was invented after the First World War, when our factories became too efficient. And that's when we started to be told that we each needed to, you know, own our own lawnmower and own our own barbecue and have five televisions. And we built our own little fiefdoms and actually started to not even know who was on the other side of the fence, know our neighbors.
Yeah, it's interesting, too, that everything, not everything, but we think of things in such a more disposable way than we used to. If we get 5 years out of a TV set before it dies, we think, well, that was okay. It's time to buy a new one anyway because there's something bigger and better out there.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. I think, again, it comes down to, you know, obsolescence, whether it's planned obsolescence, which is when companies intentionally make things to break, or whether it's perceived obsolescence, which is, I mean, I love Apple products and I'm as guilty as anyone. But, you know, the example I like to give is if you bought an iPod that, you know, every iPod that had come on the market since, 2001, you'd own 18 iPods. And that's, you know, we've become addicted to things that are bigger, smaller, faster, slower, shinier, colored, make different noises. And that's, it's very scary. The deeper sort of economics of that is our economy has become dependent on us craving new. You know, we're suffering from what they call neophilia.
Well, you know, Apple was really clever because with the new iPhone 4 that came out, they made the shape just different enough that you can tell at a glance whether somebody's got the old dinosaur original iPhone or the new one.
That's exactly right. And I think where they're just brand geniuses is that, you know, it's the social statement that you make. You want to be seen with the latest 4G phone because if you've got the old one, you're sort of passé. But I, you know, this is, we've got off on sort of a negative start, but I actually believe a change is happening. And part of the rise is that people are starting to express themselves, not just through owning stuff, but through shared experiences and the communities that they belong to.
Let's talk about some of the markets where collaborative consumption is really thriving. You write about product service systems, and this includes things like Netflix, where if you use the service enough, you can essentially see 20 movies for the price you might pay to own a single DVD.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, product service systems are essentially, Netflix is a great example. And, you know, Netflix actually started to reinvent the rental business and the movie ownership business 10 years ago. And so the basic idea of a product service system is you pay for the usage of a product rather than needing to own that product outright. So you pay for the usage of a movie versus buying the movie and it becomes obsolete after you've watched it once. And we're seeing this principle apply to all kinds of sectors, from transportation to equipment to consumer goods. And it's particularly taking off with products that have what I call high idling capacity. So a car, the average car actually sits idle for 23 hours of the day. And so you're paying for, you know, the car, but you're only the idea of car sharing is that you only pay for that 1 hour of usage.
And how is car sharing different than just renting a car when you need one?
Yeah, I mean, car sharing is different because there's two types of car sharing actually emerging. There's the likes of Zipcar, where you have a membership to access cars anytime that you need them. And it's really different from the experience of Avis and Hertz in two ways. One is convenience, and the other is choice. So with Zipcar, you have a membership card, so you actually never have to interact with the company. You can book everything online. They have, you know, this fantastic iPhone app where you can see the cars that are available in your neighborhood. You can even use the app to unlock the door and honk the horn to identify which one is yours. So it's a very seamless experience that is sort of miles apart from the paperwork and the lines and the restricted hours of car rental.
And the idea with most of these car sharing services is it's people who don't own a car but occasionally might need one to bring home heavy groceries or something.
Yeah, it's there are definitely a big user base, but there also there's a growing user base of families that have, you know, were traditionally two car families, and they've realized that they may need the one car because, you know, one of them commutes to work or they have a regular school run, but it's the second car that's not being used, and it's the second car that's, you know, the average car is $8,500 a year to run. And so they're saying, why do we need that second car? We can just pay for it when we need the odd errand.
And I guess the idea is that you always get it from the same spot and then you return it to wherever it is that you picked it up. Is that right?
Yeah. I mean, the beauty of it, I used to live in the States, but now I live in Sydney, Australia. And there's a system out there which is very similar called GoGet. And the amazing thing is 1 minute from my house, there's five cars available. And so some days I drive a Mini, and other days I actually need a bigger car, like a Volvo, to go and pick stuff up. And I can choose between those five cars. And the other great thing is where I live, there's real parking problems, but I never have to worry about that because they have designated parking spots. So I always talk about it's like having a car, having access to a car without the hassles of ownership, and that's the real benefit of the system.
Do people take as good care of things that they don't own as things that they realize that they're going to be responsible for maintaining?
That's a great question. And the really interesting thing, I mean, just sticking with the cars because it's an easier one to understand, you know, there's like a badge of honor around, like people say, you know, being a Zipster is carries a cachet of carrying an iPhone. And so I think there's something about that keeps them on their best behavior because they're proud to be a part of this community. But also there's accountability systems. So with the car share I use, you have a little report card that if you got in the car and there was trash on the floor or it smelled a bit funny or dog hairs, you can write a little note and report that person and they pay a fine. And if you sort of commit so many of those, you know, not treating the car in the right way, you actually get kicked out of the community.
That's another really interesting thing is this idea that we can instantly provide feedback on someone who hasn't really been fair with us in a trade kind of deal.
Yeah, I mean, you've hit on the social glue and what makes these systems work. It hasn't been possible before, reputation systems. And that's everything from the recommendation side of things. So one of the big sectors taking off is Airbnb, which is peer-to-peer travel, where people are saying, oh, I have a spare room, or I have a beautiful house in the Hamptons, or I have a holiday home in France, and they're renting them out peer-to-peer. And you see how the feedback and review works in that you can look at other peers, what they've said about people, to make your decision. And then it works on the flip side in that you can report your stay and sort of indicate whether that person is trustworthy or whether they're not.
Yeah, it's interesting because it feels like a big leap of faith to let someone you've never met before from who knows where, you know, stay in your villa in France if you're lucky enough to have one. But I guess there's that sense that if you do it and you mess up, everyone's going to know about
it. Yeah, I mean, it's the big theme of transparency. You know, it's actually in some ways it's driven by self-interest. You know that if you mess up, your reputation's going to be damaged. And the funny thing is, like, I've used Airbnb quite a bit, and I'm actually renting out my house over Christmas. You really get to know people before they come and stay, you have a choice around who you let stay in your home and who you don't trust. And I think it's actually only a matter of time where we can actually start to see how someone sort of treats Zipcar, and that will determine whether we let them rent our house or rent our drill, if you see what I mean. That we'll, like, our credit history will have a reputation trail.
Rachel Botsman is my guest. She's a brand and innovation strategy consultant whose new book, written with Rue Rogers, is called What's Mine is Yours, The Rise of Collaborative Consumption. We'll come back to our conversation with Rachel in a couple of minutes. If you would like to have a copy of this book, which also lists a variety of services that are available here in the U.S. That you might want to try out for yourself, that's available at the $120 membership level when you call us today at 1-888-694-6931 or when you go online to kera.org. Hi, Jeff.
Hey, Chris. And of course, you could get a copy and share it with a bunch of folks, but we're hoping today...
She actually recommends that.
Well, it's a great idea. We're hoping today that even if you plan to do that, that you'll still call and support the station at 888-694-6931 or online at kera.org. We started this hour with a goal, Chris, of 50 calls or online contributions. We've heard from a few people. I want to thank Steve Judy in Dallas, Ashley Upton in Murphy, and Heather Carlson in Fort Worth. We've heard from them all in the last few minutes. Of course, there are still people to thank from the previous hour. And, of course, we want to thank you if you've supported the show or the station at all during the last couple of weeks, this membership campaign.
Thank you, Sandra Campbell from Denton, and James Dom from Dallas, Judith Jacobs from Grapevine, Michael Pascuzzi in Dallas, Cone Drennan in Dallas, Lynn Badgewell in Fort Worth, Corey Whiteland, a volunteer here as well from Dallas, thanks for the contribution, and Robert Blackman in Cleburne.
Also, thanks to Kevin Rainick in Frisco and John O'Sullivan in Dallas. You can join these great folks who not just listen, not only listen to KERA, but also support it by calling 888-694-6931. And don't forget, you can get your very own copy of What's Mine is Yours, The Rise of Collaborative Consumption by Rachel Botsman and Rue Rogers. When you join today, join the station and support the station at the $120 membership level. That's just $10 a month if you join as a sustaining member and set up your sustaining membership. It's really easy to do. Just make that call, 888-694-6931.
There's a lot about public radio that makes me think of collaborative consumption. You know, this is really a collaborative effort to make the station work. We work here. We trust you to make a contribution because you trust the product and you know that it's worth something to you. It is radio on the honor system, and so many of you have stepped up. Even though we can't follow you around and give you a reputation point, you know for yourself that it's, it really speaks to who you are as a person and what you value when you make a contribution to public radio and to KERA specifically. You can do that now by going online to kera.org, or you can call us at 1-888-694-6931.
You're not just making a contribution, you're confirming your relationship with KERA and the fact that you listen, the fact that you use the station, you get something out of this program and the service. So please call 888-694-6931. Again, that number is 1-888-694-6931. Or contribute online. Do it right now at kera.org.
If you have already made your contribution, we certainly want to thank you. And we would ask if you have a couple of extra minutes, post that, you know, send out a tweet about it or put it on your Facebook or let people know that you're doing this because you also have an influence on your friends and your neighbors and your family members who listen to the station. Again, you can go online to make a contribution at kera.org or call 1-888-694-6931.
Funding for Think comes from SMU's continuing and professional education. Hundreds of personal and professional development courses start this fall. Details online at smu.edu/CAPE.
Yeah. You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. My guest this hour is brand and innovation strategy consultant Rachel Botsman. Her new book is called What's Mine is Yours, The Rise of Collaborative Consumption. You can also find her work online at collaborativeconsumption.com. If you'd like to join the conversation, call us at 1-800-933-5372 or send email to think@kera.org. We have an email here from Bill in Dallas who writes, my wife is a realtor and it's necessary in her business to have a nice car like a Lexus for when she shows clients around. Would the Zipcar model work for this need?
Sorry, would the Zipcar model work for me?
Work for his wife needing a good car when she shows her clients around, but not the rest of the time.
Yeah, I mean, it's a great question. I think one of the great things about Zipcar is that it offers the choice. So within the inventory, there's everything from minis to BMWs to Lexuses. And, you know, she could pick which car she shows up in every single day. So that's what I think is so brilliant about the system, is it actually is sort of delivering the holy grails of consumerism in terms of convenience and choice, but in a very different way to the old car model.
Is this still a reflection of how much we want and how we want to have everything brand new? In some ways, that drive doesn't change at all with this.
I think it does. I mean, I think we're actually, this isn't just about sharing stuff and finding different business models around accessing what we need. I think it's actually the start of a fundamental change in the relationship between producers and consumers and the way that we express our identity and think about ownership. So I think it's really easy to get caught up in sort of the models and sort of how it manifests itself. But actually, it's a much deeper cultural change that's starting.
What are traditional companies doing, Rachel, who make their money from selling this stuff outright to people?
Yeah, I mean, it's a great question. Some of the big companies are starting to embrace the ideas in different ways. So to give you a few examples, Bill Ford recently stood up and to his investors said, we're no longer in the business of cars, we're in the business of mobility. And you're already seeing the likes of Daimler and Peugeot launch not just car sharing platforms, but ride sharing platforms where people say, oh, I have a car and I have four empty seats and I can make some money off that and it's more efficient. You're then seeing companies like Interface Carpets, which is, you know, not an example you'd think of, where they're realizing that people actually don't want to own the carpet, they want to rent the carpet, and they want to be able to replace the carpet when someone makes a spill. And then you're seeing companies like Nike, where I wouldn't say they're an example of collaborative consumption, but they're recognizing that the way to actually sell product is through building community. So Nike have this platform called Nike Plus, which is a massive running club where people connect about how far they've run and their diets and music that you should listen to. And that is actually a form of community.
I thought it was interesting that a few years ago, Amazon, which makes a lot of money either selling things directly or facilitating traditional marketers who want to sell their products, also opened up an eBay-like line for people to trade in used goods.
Yeah, you're seeing that's another, you're starting to see big consumer product companies or platforms like Amazon facilitate the trading of peer-to-peer, so sort of versions of eBay but for different types of goods. And I think we'll see that start happening. Like, you know, I used to be a big fan of Zappos, and I don't know why Tony Hsieh doesn't start a swap trading platform for shoes or a shoe repair system where you send back your shoes and they come back looking like new.
Let's talk about clothing. I have to confess that when I read about ThredUp, I paused in my research in reading the book and I went online and I signed up. I have a lot of kids at home, and this is a deal where you essentially trade away the clothes your kids have outgrown, and then you can get a brand new or used set of clothes from someone else whose kids have outgrown those.
Yeah, I mean, you know, again, this is one of those this thinking is ideal for things that become obsolete very quickly or that are hardly used. And as you know, having kids, they outgrow them so quickly. And I think there's a crazy stat, like by the time a child is 17, they would have actually gone through 1,700 items of clothing.
Oh,
and you would have spent over $23,000, and that's just the average. And what's so brilliant about ThredUp is it's kind of like Netflix for kids' clothes. in that if you had to trade each baby crow for a baby crow, it probably wouldn't be efficient. Mm-hmm. So what they've done is you sort of buy small, medium, or large boxes, and you stuff those boxes with all the stuff that they've outgrown, and then you receive a box from someone that has a child, you know, in the same age range, the same sex, and also likes the labels that you like. So you can trade with people that have Petit Bateau or The Gap and actually say your style preferences.
Hmm. One thing I wonder about that is when I looked at the site, they trust people really implicitly up front. In fact, you can get your first box of clothing before you are required to send one off. And at first I thought that seemed risky. And then I thought, no, because you really feel an obligation then to come through.
You've hit the nail on the head. And James, the founder, talks about that he actually wants people to have the experience of opening that box up. And it's a bit like Christmas or a Cracker Jack. Mm-hmm. You know, you don't quite know what's inside. And what happens is you have a really good experience, so you want to pay it forward and pass it on.
We have an email here from Ira who writes, collaborative consumption has a dark side. Fewer jobs, higher unemployment rate, not something anyone should desire in the current environment. What do you think about that?
I mean, it's something comes up again and again because people are scared when you talk about cutting out the middlemen. But, you know, I actually go back to examples in history. You know, when the printing press was invented, everyone was up in arms that, you know, what's going to happen to the scribes and what's going to happen to the ink sellers. And often when we're at the beginning of change, we actually can't see the opportunities that it will create. And I point to examples like Etsy. For those that don't know Etsy, it's a big craft marketplace where people trade peer-to-peer. And Etsy, you know, is growing at a phenomenal rate, both in terms of employees, but also the number of members that it supports. And it's created a whole community of people that can now make a living selling stuff that they make where they never had a marketplace before.
Because you don't know, you know, 24 hours a day, anywhere in the world, there might be somebody who wants those crocheted sweaters that you're making.
Exactly, and you can actually find those people. It's like, you know, what the internet does is it matches haves and wants, so people can find you for the first time. And the other thing that I say is, you know, these service models, they still require employees. You know, Zipcar grew by 114% over the last 2 years. They actually require a whole range of jobs, from marketing to people that clean the cars to engineers. It's just different sectors are emerging.
It does seem to me that there would be a greater demand for quality products if they're going to be used over and over constantly by different people. So better quality things need to be manufactured to stand up to the demand.
And that's why I think this is a huge opportunity for designers and manufacturers that recognize that. You know, if you think about what it does is it flips on its head. You know, obsolescence is no longer the goal. Longevity is the goal. And you're starting to see that. I mean, to give you an example, B-Cycle, which is one of the bike sharing schemes popping up around the world. And bike sharing is the fastest growing form of transportation. And these bikes have built-in calorie counters, carbon monitors, GPS route systems. You can download your iTunes. So the bikes are actually way cooler than any bike you could individually own. And you think of all, you know, the design that went into that and the thinking that went into that, I think we're going to start to see products that are intentionally made to last a lifetime and that have a built intelligence that means that they can be continually upgraded without having to throw them away.
So, Rachel, something that you can send through the mail or through UPS obviously has global ramifications, but I'm wondering if a lot of these services are mostly only available in large urban areas.
It's different. I mean, what we're seeing is that in large urban areas, you tend to see what I would call centralized things. So things like Zipcar, where the company owns an inventory, and you can access that inventory. But in suburbia and rural areas, you're seeing a real pop-up of neighborhood schemes. So that's everything from neighborhood sharing, like Share Some Sugar and Neighboro and Neighborhood Goods, to the resurgence of things like time banks. And time banks are basically, because it's not just stuff that can be shared. It's space, money, time, skills. It's all kinds of assets. And you're seeing people in communities recognize everyone has assets that are sitting idle that mean that we can form community in new ways.
I love the idea that there are people who have extra land and there are people who wish they had land for a garden and they're coming together.
that's one of my favorite examples, actually, in the book. I called it God and Dating. And, you know, there's Shared Earth in the U.S., Share Your Backyard, there's Land Share in the U.K., and it's based on the premise that there's so many people who want to grow their own food, but they often don't have space. So it matches people with back gardens with people that want to grow their own food. And the amazing thing about it is, like, my dad started to do it in the U.K., and he knows the people in his neighborhood for the first time in 18 years. So it's actually about far more than growing the food. It's about the community connections that it forms.
Yeah, it is really remarkable these days that if you don't make an effort or live in a really special kind of neighborhood, it's pretty easy to be there for decades and not be on a first-name basis with the people three houses down.
Yeah, I mean, I think I slightly blanked on the stat, but I think it's like 7 out of 10 people don't know their neighbors' names.
That's sort of sad. And I guess there's also, you know, establishing trust for the first time, I have to imagine that carries over into other things beyond the initial transaction.
It does, and that's what's so fascinating about it is, I say sharing is contagious, because what you often find is, say, that the gentleman that called up and asked about his wife, they might try Zipcar, and then they think, wow, this is cool, and I discovered benefits that I didn't even imagine. And then they start to try, you know, social lending, which is money matchmaking between people. They might try their community garden. So it sort of opens their eyes up to things that they'd never seen before.
Rachel Botsman is my guest. She's a brand and innovation strategy consultant. Her new book, written with Rue Rogers, is called What's Mine is Yours, The Rise of Collaborative Consumption. You can join our conversation by calling us at 1-800-933-5372, or you can send email to think@kera.org. We do have copies available of What's Mine is Yours. They're available today when you make a contribution at or above the $120 level. You can do that most easily and probably most quickly online at kera.org, or you can call us at 1-888-694-6931. Hello, Jeff.
Hey, Chris. And I can imagine you listening out there feverishly writing down these websites. You can get your own copy of the book when you join the station today at the $120 membership level. Of course, we're not selling you this book for $120. We're just doing the shopping for you and thanking you for supporting your public radio station, KERA, by sending you the book. So it's a pretty typical thing we do. And, of course, the book is then yours to use, to share, to let people know what you think about collaborative consumption. And I think it's a great topic for the show today. And I know that many of you listening right now are appreciating this conversation. So why not call 888-694-6931 or go online to kera.org and make a contribution. I do want to thank Paul and Brinja Grant in Fort Worth. Let's see, Jamie Carrero and Olga Usino in Louisville, Robert and Maureen Banowitz in Arlington. They've all done their part. How about you? 888-694-6931 or online at kera.org.
We talk about this a lot, but it never becomes less true. It really is a partnership between those of us who work here at the station and those of you who allow us to do this work for you by contributing to the cost of public radio in your community. KERA takes the money that you send us and we put it into the programming that you hear every day. You can check in anytime on your investment in the station, on your investment in the community, because anytime you turn on the radio, you can think, there's my $120 at work, there's my $1,500 at work, there's my $30 at work. Whatever amount works for you and for your budget, we will definitely turn it into quality radio programming that you can hear throughout the year. Give us a call now at 1-888-694-6931 or go online to kera.org.
We started the show today, Chris, with a goal of 50 contributions at any level. 50, really, it'd be great if we got 50 contributions at a level of around $100 or so to speed this drive along. We have heard from a few of you. Thank you so much. If you've called 888-694-6931, thank you very much if you've gone and made a contribution online at kera.org. However, we still are looking for 41 new or renewing members to make the goal for the show today. The great news is that we're almost hit $362,000 raised. So that means we're beyond the halfway point in this membership campaign and moving very a lot quicker at this point toward the overall goal of $700,000. Once we reach that goal, the membership drive will cease immediately and we'll go back to the regular schedule. And your call right now, your online contribution right now really will help move this along.
Some of you who like to match your giving level to a particular thank you gift, I think wait to hear something mentioned that you hadn't heard mentioned before, or you think maybe there's something better coming along and I should hold off. The truth is the vast majority of what we'll be offering throughout this drive is already available for you to look at online at KERA.org. Just about everything, unless we've run out, that we have mentioned throughout this drive is still available. So please don't hesitate. Go online, check it out, even if we're not talking about it right now. But there's a thank you gift you really wanted to pick up for yourself or for a friend. It should still be available, and you can see a picture of it in a description at KERA.org.
This is your public radio station. We say it over and over, and we know that you love learning something new every day. We know that you learn, you love this kind of radio, radio substance, content, and conversations like our conversation right now with Rachel Botsman. We're going to go back to that conversation in just a couple of minutes. We urge you to right now take a moment and call 888-694-6931 or to go online to KERA.org and make a contribution, because only with your contribution, only with the money that you as a listener sends to the station, only with that money can this station continue to exist and to continue to serve you. So Mark Villanova in North Richland Hills gets it. Thank you so much, Mark, for calling 888-694-6931 or for contributing at KERA.org. We're still waiting to hear, however, from you.
We have 40 calls to go before the end of Think Today in order to meet our goal. You know, we set these goals assuming a certain amount of money will come in as we set them, and that will keep us on track for raising the money that we need for this drive. Our overall total this time is about $700,000. We are more than halfway there, thanks to you. When you make a contribution to KERA, you are investing in a community resource, something that we all consume collaboratively, and with luck, we all pay for it collaboratively as well. It would be impossible for just about everybody listening to have their own private radio station. This is the next best thing. And you pitch in the amount of money that makes sense according to your budget. 1-888-694-6931 is the number. You can also do this online at KERA.org.
You're right, Chris. It is a collaborative effort that makes public radio work. Even though you listen to the station on your own for the most part, maybe in your car, at work, at home, on the internet, your contribution along with everybody else who will call, who will go online, makes it all possible. So go online to KERA.org and thanks.
Funding for Think comes from SMU's continuing and professional education. Hundreds of personal and professional development courses start this fall. Details online at smu.edu/CAPE.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. My guest this hour is Rachel Botsman. She's a brand and innovation strategy consultant. Her website is collaborativeconsumption.com. Her new book, written with Rue Rogers, is called What's Mine is Yours, The Rise of Collaborative Consumption. You can be part of our conversation this afternoon by sending email to think@kera.org or by calling 1-800-933-5372. Before the break, Rachel, you briefly mentioned something that I think is a really interesting element of this phenomenon, social lending. This is where an individual lends money to another individual, not someone they necessarily know, but this is not like giving your brother-in-law $50 to go to the game. There's a someone in the middle who's making sure that this is a safe idea.
That's exactly right. It's the likes of Zopa and Lending Club. It are facilitating peer-to-peer lending. And basically what it does is say you have $100 to lend, it will match you with someone who wants to borrow $100. But they still do all the rigor of traditional credit history checks. What happens, though, is because the big bank is cut out the middle, your interest rates are around, I think, 8.5% around now. But the more interesting part is that the default rate is remarkably low at 0.64%. Now, when you compare that to credit cards or traditional banks, which are around 7%, the reason is because people are saying, I trust you. I feel more accountable to you than I do a big bank.
Yeah, that's interesting. You really don't want to, you know, ruin it for some individual, because you can imagine the person that's on the other end that would suffer if you didn't send in your payment on time.
That's exactly right. And I think it's really interesting that, you know, social lending increased by 800% last year. And it's really taking off in countries such as the UK, where our trust in the big banks completely sunk. It completely broke. And people are saying, you know, I still need personal loans, but I wanna find a system that feels more transparent, feels more accountable, and doesn't feel like I'm getting ripped off in fees just by a lot of fat in the middle.
We have an email here from Anna in McKinney who writes, I would like to know how I could go about creating a collaborative consumption project in my neighborhood.
It's a great question. I mean, there's all kinds of ways. One of my favorite things is, it happens at a big macro company level, but also a neighborhood level. And some of the examples I've seen that really take off in neighborhoods are tool lending libraries, where basically people gather some tools and start to lend them out to the neighborhood. And that could be anything from power drills to weed whackers to gardening tools. The other is starting some kind of community garden. Actually, what we see popping up a lot in the States are things called trade school, where it's basically saying, you know, most people in your community have something to teach, they have something to offer, and they also have something they want to learn. So it's a barter system where basically you teach French, and then in exchange you get to learn photography. So I think it's a question of looking at your community and figuring out, what does it really need? Does it need access to local food? Does it need to bring the community together in closer ways? And different communities are ready for different things.
And I guess depending on how this is all set up, you don't necessarily have to find someone who can teach you how to, you know, lay tile if that's not what you need. But in other words, you can teach three people guitar and not have them have to. Does that make sense?
In other words, it's not a direct exchange.
Exactly. Thank you for articulating that.
You could cut my hair, but then you may not want me to write you an article, for example.
Right.
So it's like banking time or banking skills, but you may want to spend that hour, for example, on someone that can take your kids to school.
How does it work with peer-to-peer lending of items? How do you make sure that somebody doesn't return your power drill with the tip all bent?
The system, I'm not going to say the system is perfect and things do happen, but the interesting thing is I've spoken to hundreds of these companies and they're the anomaly. So it's around 1% traditionally. And it's like eBay, you know, 98% of trades on eBay receive a positive rating. And it's the same thing. And again, it comes back to what we were talking about in terms of accountability. If you borrowed my power drill and you returned it and all the bits were missing or it was broken, I could flag you in the system and you would eventually be kicked out. So you're only actually doing yourself harm by not treating my goods with care.
I was intrigued to think that some of these travel services, actually people engage in them not so much to save money, but because they want to meet new people.
That's exactly right. When you talk to people, they talk about two things. One, that they can gain access to houses and flats and villas and, you know, there's hobbit huts in New Zealand and castles in Scotland that would have been out of their reach. But the more important reason is you think, you know, I'm in a hotel at the moment. I'm not interacting with anyone. There's no one to show me around Boston. But if you choose to stay with someone, they act as your host. So you can find out the cool restaurants. You can have the local experiences that make travel different and unique.
And I would imagine there's a certain kind of person who's interested in that experience, and therefore that sort of person would be more likely to participate in this in the first place.
Yeah, I mean, even within peer-to-peer travel, there's really two types of users. There's people that want to stay with other people, and like you said, these are people that love to travel. They love to learn about hidden secrets, local experiences. And then there's people that actually, you know, they still like their privacy when they travel, so they book places where the person is away. But even in those situations, I'm using Airbnb a lot. The person leaves a list of recommendations. They leave local food in the fridge. You know, I've stayed in a place where they've actually told, like, the local shop, oh, there's someone coming from Australia, be nice to her. So, you know, people take a lot of pride in playing innkeeper, if you like.
Have you ever had an issue where the neighbors didn't know something like this was underway and thought, what are you doing unlocking this person's door?
Once. Yeah, I did, actually. And it was actually more the super. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's interesting in that in New York, there's all kinds of issues with co-op boards and things like that. But that was, you know, one out of 10 where there was actually a problem. And then once you explain it, people are actually fine with it and okay.
I have to commend you for putting your money where your mouth is on this. You actually encourage people who buy your book, and this is like inside the front cover, to go ahead and share it with somebody else after they read it.
Yeah, I mean, it was an interesting conversation with the publishing house, HarperCollins. But, you know, I really, inside the book, there's an old-fashioned library card. And it's, on one hand, it's actually a sort of acknowledgement that libraries were actually one of the first examples of this system. Mm-hmm. But also, I want as many people as possible to read this book and, and not just pass it on, but, like, try bartering or try trading. Try experiencing what I'm talking about through the book that you've bought.
It's interesting that with the new digital reading formats, it's much harder to share things. They, you know, you're not producing a product, which is helpful, but you can't so much pass it on to somebody else.
Yeah, I'm not entirely sure I agree. I think actually a lot of what I'm talking about is tied to digital sharing. And I think the sharing of files and digital books and music and knowledge and daily thoughts and photos is actually, you know, dematerialization is really tied to collaborative consumption, in that these sharing behaviors are now extending into other parts of our lives.
And is that what convinces you that this is much bigger than people's, you know, current money concerns?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's tied to four key things, which, you know, I know it's not just a reaction to the recession. You know, one is environmental concerns, and two is the recession, but it's not just for cost-saving or money-making reasons. I think it's led to a questioning of the health of the consumer system and what makes us happy in the way that we've never seen before. And I think that's converging with two big trends. One is social networks and real-time technologies that are creating an unprecedented connectivity to share and collaborate. Combined with this resurgence in community. You know, I made a comment the other day that the New York Times picked up on, which is that Facebook and farmers markets have a lot in common with each other because all around us we're actually going back to community and going back to gaining sort of fulfillment in life through shared experiences versus owning more stuff.
Rachel Botsman is a brand and innovation strategy consultant. Her new book, written with Rue Rogers, is called What's Mine is Yours, The Rise of Collaborative Consumption. You can also learn more at their website, collaborativeconsumption.com. Rachel, thank you so much for spending the hour with us.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
If you would like to receive a copy of Rachel Botsman's new book, What's Mine is Yours, we have that available when you make a contribution at or above the $120 level today. You can do this online at kera.org, or you can call 1-888-694-6931. Jeff Whittington is back. Hey, Jeff.
Hey, Chris. We started at the beginning of the hour looking for 50 new or renewing members. It'd be great if those were people who contributed around what the average gift is, about $100 or so. We are still looking for 31 calls to 888-694-6931 or online contributions at kera.org. And I want to thank one listener, Claire Dempsey, who called in from Dallas, made a contribution and said she really appreciates something that's thought-provoking during the lunch hour, and she supported the station and the show because of that.
We're a healthy lunch, intellectually, maybe. Thanks also to Ralph and Megan Winston in Fort Worth and Frank Calland in Collinsville, Zoe Ann Holmes and Stephen Turek in Rockwall. Thanks also to Claire Gilliam in Denton, Caitlin Overton in Dallas, Catherine Johnson and Philip Rains in Richardson.
888-694-6931 is the number where you can join these folks in their support of KERA. The big ball of snow is picking up speed. We've passed the halfway point in the campaign. We're probably getting close to around $363,000 raised so far. That means that there's around 347,000 left to, or 337 rather, left to go. to finish the membership campaign. And you know, that sounds like a lot of money, but your contribution right now online at KERA.org or at 888-694-6931 will help make it happen and make it a reality, and we'll wrap it up and get right back to the regular schedule as soon as we make that goal.
You know, Jeff, it's sort of like a positive rather than a negative version of this, but it's like when you have a leak, a little drip in a sink or a shower, and you think, well, there's only a drop coming out at a time. And then if you put a bucket there and go off to work and you see that the bucket has overflowed, all those little drops eventually add up and make $700,000, which is great for KERA. It's great for our ability to continue to serve you the programming that you really care about.
It's the opposite of the death by a thousand cuts, I guess.
Right. It's life by a thousand pledges.
Hugs. Call us, 888-694-6931. Go online to KERA.org. KERA does exist because of your thousand contributions. There are thousands of people in North Texas who listen to the station. You're one of those people. Sadly, only about 10% of the listeners support the station. And we don't say that so that you feel good about being in that that 90% of people who don't support the station. We do it, we say it, we mention it, we quote the stat over and over to convince you to join that 10%. We'd love to see 12 or 15 or even 20% of KERA's listenership, which you're a part of, calling 888-694-6931. Gosh, if you just did it today, if you just went online today at KERA.org, all of you who enjoyed this show with Rachel Botsman, everyone who's listening to Think Today, the drive would actually probably end very shortly.
1-888-694-6931 is the telephone number. You can also make a contribution online at KERA.org. The truth is, you make the decision every time we have a fundraising drive to give or not to give. If you haven't done it before, why not try it? You're not, you know, locked in for life if you don't want to be. Try it, see how it makes you feel, see how it enhances the experience of public radio for you and makes you feel like you really are tied into your community. And see how great it is. You know, I would venture to say when you make a contribution, you are not likely to miss the money, particularly if you sign up for a sustaining membership, which will just take a little bit every month out of your checking account. And then you can make a substantial contribution to something that matters in your life. Where would you go if KERA didn't exist? It would be very hard to duplicate this programming that just flows out of your radio every day. We're glad that it's there for you, but it is not free to produce.
It is your source for NPR News, 90.1 KERA, Dallas, Fort Worth, Denton, 100.1 K261 CW in Tyler, 88.3 K202 DR in Wichita Falls, and 99.3 K257 EV in Sherman. And you can support it at 888-694-6931 or click on the support banner across the top of the page, the main page, when you go to KERA.org, and you'll be whisked at the speed of light to the support page for KERA.
Depending on your servers.
That's true.
We are looking still for 31 contributions during Think Today in order to stay up with our goals. We spend your money very carefully, and we talk about this sometimes. We are not required as employees of the station to be members of the station. I think almost to a one, everybody who works here is, simply because we believe in the product. That also tells you that we have a vested interest in spending money carefully. You know, I don't want my contribution to be wasted on things that don't really matter. The truth is, I want my contribution to go to the programming that I count on. When I'm not listening, I'm away from work. When I'm not working, rather, I often have the radio on and I'm loving the product as much as you do.
And even when we're not listening as contributors or people who work here, we want the content to be there for you, for everybody else, for the whole community here in North Texas. That's what public radio is all about. And that's why, you know, we encourage you to do it for yourself because you use the station and you get something out of it. But you know what? You can also do it for the community. When you join the station, you're helping to make sure that KERA and public radio exists in North Texas for everyone.
1-888-694-6931 is the number. You can also go to KERA.org. Sometimes people say, well, I can make a contribution, but why would I? Because I get this service already. Of course, that's true, but you get it because somebody else made a contribution so that it made it possible. And you can get something additional. If you already take for granted that you have this great service, you can consider a thank you gift of any kind. We have copies of What's Mine is Yours, the book on collaborative consumption by Rachel Botsman. We have Ken Burns DVDs. We have coffee mugs. We have cookbooks. We have whatever might make you think, okay, I'm also getting something extra when I make my contribution.
Plus, we'll throw in the radio station with any thank you gift that you choose to
receive.
Free
for a whole year.
You'll get the radio station absolutely free like you already do. You'll know that you can tune in anytime and get the latest and greatest in news and information and just the best darn programming that radio has to offer right here in North Texas. That's got to be worth something to you. So decide what it's worth and call us.
1-888-694-6931 is the telephone number. Still looking for 30 contributions within this next hour in order to stay on track with our goals for fundraising. You can also do this online at kera.org. Check out thank you gifts, ways to pay. The whole transaction, whether on phone or online, shouldn't take you more than a maximum of about 2 minutes. We appreciate your support. Thanks.
Think production team includes associate producer Betsy Lewis and engineer Nilofer Arsala. Our senior producer is Jeff Whittington. Learn more about today's show, find out about upcoming programs, and download our free daily podcasts at kera.org/think. And we'd like to hear what you think about Think. Email your comments, questions, and suggestions to think@kera.org.